Hello, 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 and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Thank you so much for joining me. In the second half of the show, we'll talk to Big Sky Productions. They're doing something sweet for Veterans Day. Shorts and sweets, dear folks, to Sullivan County. These are letters and stories in a taste of home. That's coming up right after the break on the local edition. But first, on the phone with us now is the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shuwankuk Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ulster County and Ellenville. And the big news is the town of Warsing has basically a new board. And let's go over some election results that came out of Ulster County this week.
Well, a lot of things basically are the same. A lot of, the top executives and so on basically ran unopposed, like March Gallagher, who is formidably excellent as the county controller. So no one really wants to get in the ring with her. And so it went, a lot of things were pretty much the usual. The biggest change, I think, is from District 20, where Lindsay Grossman now replaces Manor Joe Green for real. And she won, that district is overwhelmingly Democratic. Well, Warsing was a little interesting because longstanding town supervisor and Republican Terry Houck lost in the supervisor's race to Joe Steckler Jr., the third, a Democrat, and also Mike Machetta lost. And Warsing Town Board will be entirely Democratic next year, in January. And a standout thing to everyone to take note of is that Samantha Ellis, running as a Democrat, will step up from her current position as a trustee on the Village of Ellenville board to becoming a council person on the town board. And that makes her, she's making history. This is the first Afro-Latina to ever have a seat on the town of Warsing board. In fact, first Afro anything to have a seat on the town of Warsing board. So what she did in this election was she motivated the community, as it were, of various peoples, but primarily African-American and Latinas, to get out and vote. And that changed things. That's my take on it. And this is going to be very interesting. We're going to have a new voice in the conversation regarding the matters before the town board. And, it completes a kind of a changeover. The last 20 years, there's been a shift in the town of Warsing towards the Democrats. There was always strength on the Democratic side, but it's now taken the whole board.
Right.
So that's that one. What else? For the county legislative seats, it's kind of weird. No change in change. Craig Lopez, who's been a Republican, who's been representing the 14th, forever, continues in that thing. He easily beat Eddie Yovio. And then on the other side, John Gavaris' seat, which is a longtime Democratic seat, he stepped down, which I think he now regrets, because he stepped down because he wasn't very well, and then he got better. But now T.J. Briggs defeated Cassie Spohr in that race, and T.J. now goes back to the county legislature where he was a representative for 10 years before Gavaris. So, it's one of those things, all change and no change. But the issues before the county are the same as they are before. Every county right now, what is happening?
Right.
Are the grant monies coming? Will they be delayed? There are so many projects in New York State that are kind of dependent in part on federal money. It's one of the things I've learned doing this job is that, and you too, I'm sure everyone who reports the news is aware of this, is that projects tend to pull money from several different pots. And there's always a little federal pot or a big federal pot that is part of it, right? And if that money is now going to be stopped because of the shutdown at the federal level or whatever's going to happen there, then, you know, a lot of projects are going to be hanging fire, and we're just going to be waiting to see what happens. And we don't know at this point. I mean, this is the terrible problem, is that we are entering sort of a chaotic period, and nobody really knows, you know. So we'll be watching. Hey, folks, tune into Radio JFF and to Radio Catskill, and you know, and catch your local newspaper, the Shongum Journal, in my case, to see what the hell is going to happen. Yeah. Because we will be following it, you know. Meanwhile, though, it can be said that in Ulster County, the county executive is well aware of these issues, and she's working on HEAP heating issues. And we also believe that the county is working with family of Woodstock in discussions of how to have a warming center in Ellenville. Now, the warming center in Kingston is funded and set up. The warming center in Ellenville was funded kind of in an emergency way last winter. This winter, we hope to see it up and fully funded to run right through the winter. The issue there is that while there is a very nicely done and finished out shelter beneath the Hunt Memorial Building, there isn't money to staff it. And the village certainly doesn't have that money. So we've got to bring in somebody outside of that who can put a few people in there every night to from midnight to six, or whatever the hours they choose to be, to run it. So that's one issue that will continue, but hopefully it's an improvement on the situation last year. This year, everyone's talking about it and working towards getting the money done now, right, before it gets to be too cold.
Chris, this is all good stuff. It's happening post-election, and now we have to gear for the holiday season and gear for the next election next year because of the New York law. Some of these town supervisors are going to be running again. So again, Chris, again, thank you so much for talking to us. We were talking to Chris Rowley, reporter from Shamrock Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ulster County and Ellenville. Chris, until next week, we'll talk to you then.
All right, everybody. Have a good time. Take care. Bye.
We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We'll be talking to Margaret and Carol from Big Sky Productions about a veterans event. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I think the president learned, and perhaps the country learned, that Democrats can, in fact, still win elections. This was a party that was pretty demoralized, and they got a huge boost of momentum and energy this past week and showed, I think, the White House that there is still an opposition party.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Joining me today are two of the creative forces behind Shorts and Sweets, honoring veterans, dear folks, a heartfelt new program from Big Sky Productions that celebrates veterans through stories, letters, and live performance. And today I'm joined with Karen Montana and Margaret Birch, writer from The Co-Extracted, who brings these letters and memories to life to stage. So thank you so much for joining me, Carol and Margaret.
Thank you for inviting us.
The next performance we're going to talk about it coming up, it's on Sunday, November 9th. It's happening at 2 p.m. at Sullivan County Historical Society Museum in Harleyville, right?
Correct, yeah.
So Carol, you know, this show blends together personal letters and veteran stories with live performance. You know, how did this idea come about?
I was cleaning out my parents' house with my sister, and I found some letters, and they were in airmail envelopes. So I opened a couple, and I found out that they were from to and from my parents when my father was in the service. And there were also a few from his brothers and sisters. I only have two from him. I don't know where the rest of them went. The interesting thing is that the first one I have from him is when he arrived in Hawaii. He then went on to Fiji, and the last one is from when he got discharged. Oh. In the meantime, there's stuff from my mother. Oh, some of it is boring, I was telling Margaret, originally I was going to transcribe and read the whole letter, but it's typical day-to-day stuff. They couldn't say a lot of things because he was in the Signal Corps, which was working on breaking the Japanese code.
Okay. And why did you go with this format instead of doing it like a traditional play and you're just reading these letters instead?
I don't write plays. I could have asked Margaret to write a play because she is a bigger writer than I am. Let me say a more involved writer than I am. I just thought that it was more personable facing the audience eye to eye and reading the letters.
Right.
And then I found some stories. And I happened to be having lunch, I think, with Margaret, and we were talking about it. And she says, I've got letters too. Let's do this.
Wow. Now, Margaret, you know, you said you're reading letters from your own family. You know, was this the first time you revisited those letters in a long time, or how did that feel? Also, just reading your past histories in her life.
So my mom saved these letters from my great grandparents' house in Brooklyn before it was demolished, like 20 years ago, and we never really saw the letters. Like, they were always in a bag downstairs. So every now and then, I get curious. And what I remembered was my uncle showed me a Purple Heart one, and I went downstairs to find it, and we don't have it. My uncle does. And so what ended up happening was I found all these letters, and I started reading a few of them. I felt kind of rude doing it because they're not mine, but I picked up one by a girl who wrote to my great uncle, and it was so funny. And I was like, who's this girl? Like, how did Uncle Joe know her? And then I just kind of got a little obsessed. I'm trying to write a historical fiction book too, so it felt like real research. And then I saw Carol and she said, oh, I'm trying to. And I was like, I have so many letters that I need to make the time to type them up. And I didn't realize how many I had. I thought it was like 25. It's like over 50. Like, I've typed 23, 24 for this, and there's still more. And that's just a smattering of, like, some from people from home, a lot from my uncle, my great uncle. He was largely in Tennessee through most of the war, and then he was sent over to Germany in 1945 to the end of the war. But yeah, it's emotional. Like, I told Carol I got to the last letter. It's a sad story. My uncle didn't come. He died 3 days after VE Day. And, you know, he kind of has loomed over the family. He was my grandmother's best friend, like my one uncle's named after him, like, you know, and so I knew that I was going to come to the end, and I knew the end of the story. And I still read that last letter and looked for another one and knew there wasn't one. So it's been weird, like, unearthing the past, because this is a family that didn't talk about it. And we have it all right there, which is amazing.
I mean, this is amazing. You know, like, I think about now how things are written and spoken about today. It's all digital. And I wonder about, you know, how folks who are in the military now writing messages to their loved ones and emails, things like that. But you can't put an email in a box or just save it, things like that. And you have these letters sort of transport you back to that time period. And not only that, it's physically, knowing that you're physically holding the paper that your uncle held also at the same time.
How fragile it is. Yeah. There's newspaper clippings. And I mean, we all worked in news, and how thin that paper is anyway. But imagine putting another 80 years on it and trying to open a newspaper clipping to see, like, he worked on barrage balloons. So they were like the anti-aircraft balloons. And you open it up and there's a picture of all the guys in the battalion and this big balloon. But you're like, I don't want to break it. Like, it's but also a little terrifying.
Carol, you know, Big Sky Productions, you've been part of doing this for almost 30 years, I would say, right?
Very good. Thank you for remembering. it's 29 years. It was 29 years in September.
Right.
And I don't know where they've all gone. I'm really proud of some of the work we've done. I did want to mention that Margaret had access to a Purple Heart. We have some stuff on display, some photos of my family, her family, and Purple Heart. And I put all the letters in a book so people can look through them. It was very emotional. It was very emotional.
Well, you had a forced performance. You had it at the Ethelbert B. Crawford Library in Monticello. How did that go? How was that?
It went very well. We had a very attentive audience, and you could tell they were moved by what we were doing. And I want to make sure everyone knows it's not just sad stuff about being in the service. We have some very cute, happy stories as we end it with some jokes.
And the letters are really funny.
The letters are really funny. Like, just for an example, there was a time when my mother's letter told my father that a couple of her family members went to the doctor because my Aunt Ina had laryngitis and she wasn't supposed to talk. Well, if you knew my Aunt Ina, you would know how difficult that was. And my mother said, she's talking even now as I'm writing. So, yeah, they're cute and some of them are funny. It was nice to go through them, but truly some very emotional moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, like the holy, to me, it's always like this holy little piece of paper that they held at one point and that journey made it overseas and come here and the mail and all that.
That's incredible. You're absolutely right. I don't know how many times I held it in my hand while I was reading, and I said, my mother touched this, my father touched this, and this one was in Hawaii, and that was from Fiji, and it's hard not to feel emotional when you're reading this kind of stuff.
And Margaret, you know, reading these letters out loud, you know, does it make you feel closer to the people, to your family members who wrote them?
It really does. There was not a lot known. My grandmother and grandfather got married after World War II. Her parents didn't attend her wedding. They were in mourning, full mourning. So my great-grandmother lost her mother in 1943. Her brother died shortly after D-Day. He was also in the service. He's buried in the Normandy American Cemetery. Mm. And then her son died 3 days after the war ended in 1945, in Europe at least. So they didn't go. They refused to go. They were in mourning. My grandmother had lost many children beforehand, too. So I think it was the final straw. So we didn't know a lot about that side of the family. And my grandmother, I never met her. She died when my mom was 10. So there's a lot of questions. And reading these letters, I've heard the stories. And like, there's letters from my grandmother. And I can see like her handwriting similar to mine. And the way they think or phrases that people say. My great-grandfather said something like, a day like today. It's cold, miserable weather. And everybody in my family uses that term. And I was, oh, that's where that came from. So I do feel closer to them. I have more questions at the same time, but I understand them more. And my mom's read the letters, and I just actually emailed them over to my uncle who's down in Virginia, and my aunt's reading them to him. And it's nice for the family. It's kind of a point of closure that we can get to know them because we had so many questions about them.
Do you think it's a generational thing that maybe Carrie, you could answer this? I'm not saying this as because you're older.
Yes, I am older. Okay, we admit that.
Do you think it's a generational thing that they wouldn't talk about? Like my father was like that. My father was in the military, not here in America, but in his country. But a lot of times he didn't talk about his past, and it was something sort of kept close to them.
These are things that I wish I had asked him when he was still alive. And why didn't I? And shame on me. And he never talked about the war. He just all we had really was from pictures from when he was in Fiji. He said he never saw any fighting. But I don't know how true that is. Sometimes they just don't want to talk about it. Definitely a generational thing.
Yeah, I think it was the time too. Like, you didn't want to bring anybody down. So all the letters from home are very positive. It's like, oh, well, we are not going to have a lot of sugar anymore, but don't worry about it. We found a pin at the church that's, you know, we love you. We miss you. We're sending, you know, and at the same time, what they lived through, I mean, it's very similar to today. I mean, 1917, following World War I, was a pandemic and there was a lot of loss. And then the Great Depression hit and there was a lot of financial uncertainty. And then World War II came around and suddenly there's a lot of loss again. And I think it was also a protection method not to talk about it or to put put things away for another time. It was the way they survived. Thank God for therapy today. I honestly think like people need it.
Yeah.
It was definitely a different time. In one of the letters, my aunt says, the neighborhood is beginning to look like its old self once the boys started coming home. And I thought that was important to include in the excerpt I was reading. I just decided, because, as I said before, some of the letters were long and boring, I just decided to pick out some excerpts from of the interesting stuff.
Yeah. You have them with you now? Do you want to read some of them? Or
let me find something. Okay. Here's one. And I did not know anything about this, so I have a little explanation. In 1945, elevator workers in New York City went on strike, significantly impacting the city by halting elevator operations in over 2,000 buildings, which left approximately 1.5 million people unable to reach their workplaces. So then my mother wrote, this is September 25th, 1945. Jessie, her sister, hasn't worked for 2 days on account of the elevator strike, and it may last a few more days. Now, in my building, the building where she worked, the men stopped for a few hours and then started to work, and they later found out they had signed an agreement. So she was able to ride up the elevator, but other relatives and friends had to walk up all the stairs. And she says, that's good exercise, right? I learned something I never knew. I looked up once I started reading about an elevator strike, I looked it up on the internet, and there it was. So I learned a lot by doing this too.
Yeah. Margaret, do you have something you want to read?
I have a lot here. This is one that I find particularly interesting. My grandmother worked for Todd Shipyards, which was also Robin's Dry Dock. And she got the job. She was 18, which blows my mind, or 17 actually at the time. She was very young. And she became the executive secretary for the vice president. And her mother wrote to my great uncle Joe, on April 6, 1942, she said, my dear son, I received your two letters this morning, one with the money order in it. I am putting three sets of pictures in this letter. Joe, I did not hear from Eddie. That's my grandmother's brother, my great-grandmother's brother. The last letter said he may leave camp in April. Lavinia did not get any mail from Al. Joe, Lavinia said the calf fellow who has the candy store is working in the yard. He must have got out of the army. Robin's yard is buying a bomber. Employees put $1 every payday in for it. Lavinia said the girl who sent you the letter must be one of the USO. Joe, Angela Price said she is going to send you something. She is Anna's daughter, Daddy's sister. Lavinia said Rose is going to write to you as well. So glad you are in good health as everything is all right home. We all send our love and I will send you a package this week. Love, Mama.
Mm.
So it little peeks into everyday life.
Yeah. You know, this show, I feel, celebrates the lost art of letter writing. Like we just talked about
storytelling.
Yeah. Okay. And will be just the art of letter writing now. You know, like that's sort of, nobody really sort of writes letters anymore to each other.
I just read somewhere, probably on Facebook, about someone writing, taking a special pen and writing, and they said how good it felt, and they think it's something everybody should do more often. And I totally remember when I was a freshman in college writing seriously 20-page letters to a friend of mine, and it flowed, and I loved sending them, and I loved getting them. And that's not something that happens anymore.
Yeah.
What's in the mail today? Bills and junk.
Definitely, yeah.
Right. Maybe we should reinvent that.
Karam and Margaret, you know, what's it like collaborating with something so personal for your lives?
I don't know about Margaret, but this was, we've done Shorts and Sweets before, my theater company. And we have themes of Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, the holidays. This was one of the most emotional things I've done. And parts of it were very hard. Of course, I miss my parents. And as you said before, this brought me closer to them. But I don't think I've ever worked so hard on one of my shows. But working with Margaret was wonderful because she gave me as much as I was giving. And we were both able to talk about what we had, and we put stuff together, figured out the way the show was going to flow. And it was just, it's been a real pleasure.
Been really enjoyable. And just given the time and the freedom to do this and to bring back these voices from the past that have been silenced. I mean, because they have. I mean, I would have loved to have seen what my great uncle Joe did if he had survived. He left poems behind, which I didn't include because I'm being a little selfish there. I might use them in a book. But just being able to have him come back for a little bit. I wish my grandmother was here to read and hear his letters. I really do. It's been an honor, really.
I have to admit, when I first found them, I was wondering, what do I do with these? I don't think my nieces or my grandniece and nephew would want them. But I don't want to lose them. I don't want this to be lost to history. So I'm thinking maybe when we finish this, I will contact the World War II Museum in New Orleans, which I have visited, and is really a very interesting, wonderful place to go, and see if they want them. I know I have quite a few photos of my father in the service, standing next to people we don't know, but that doesn't matter. I don't know if they have any use for them. They are welcome to them.
Yeah,
it would be nice to know that they're preserved somewhere. You think, Margaret?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I know I'm doing the same thing
I'll
right
let you
now.
Know
my mom and I are like, we've got an envelope full of negatives, too. And I'm just like, what do we do with
these? Yeah, what do we do with these?
Yeah.
I'm so glad we found a way to use them.
Right.
And present them. History is important.
Yeah.
Seriously important. And it's just so nice to have these and to learn about somebody's experience.
Yeah,
in the service.
It is, especially, you know, we know the story of World War I, World War II, and you hear the big broad strokes of what happened here. There's always these little small stories of individual experiences that folks had in the war.
Oh, you're so right.
Yeah.
It's important. You put them all together and you get a bigger picture. Absolutely.
Yeah. Margaret and Carol, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about?
I just wanted to let everybody know it's 2:00 this Sunday at the Sullivan County Historical Society. Admission is free. If someone wants to give a free will donation to the Historical Society Museum, it will be accepted graciously, gratefully. And then there's one other performance, and that's at Margaret, why don't you tell them what that is?
Yeah, the final performance is on Friday, November 14th at 5 p.m. It's at the Tustin Keshecton branch, the Narrowsburg branch of the Western Sullivan Public Library. I was speaking to Sierra, the programmer there, and she said people should register online, a free event. You just go onto their calendar and you can register to attend just for numbers. But yeah, so that's Friday, November 14th. So after Veterans Day as well.
Right.
And there is a Big Sky Productions page. We are not the one with the helicopter. We are the one with a picture of our late last murder mystery up at the top. It's truly, there is a company in Montana called Big Sky Productions, and they do aerial photography.
Well, I was speaking with Carol and Margaret from Big Sky Productions about the performance Shorts and Sweets Honoring Veterans Dear Folks. It's happening on Sunday, November 9th at 2 p.m. at the Sullivan County Historical Society Museum in Hurleyville. Carol, Margaret, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
And that does it for the local edition on this Friday evening. I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Thank you to all my guests this evening. We'll be back on Monday. We do this all over again. Check out Radio Chatskill starting at 10 a.m. and the local edition starting at 6 p.m. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.